You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
It is a Thursday. That means it is Shapeshifter Thursday. This is one of our biggest segments on the show. Of course, precisely because we bring you some of the leading minds across the world, as they tell us a little bit about who they are. You might have seen them, you might be following them, and perhaps from a distance you're wondering what makes them tick. Well, let me tell you, we also ask the same question. What makes them tick? That's why we have this conversation, right? Our shapeshifter today is Christine Mundwa, an experienced conference facilitator, host, and moderator who brings her communication skills and natural ability to converse with people into her work as a panel moderator. I've already felt the pressure here. MC and a host. She has moderated events featuring NGOs, civil society organizations, politicians, lawmakers in Europe and Africa, right? Europe and Africa, the African Union and European Union commissioners. She's spoken to activists and business leaders, and I have the personal pleasure to talk to her this evening, and she's joining us, and I really, really look forward to this conversation. Ma'am, good evening. Welcome to the show. Thank you for your time.
Hi, Tabelo. It's good to be with you today.
Ah, thank you so much. Really appreciate you. How's the year so far been for you?
Well, I might have chosen a different start.
Okay.
But I have to say that in everything that's happened in the first few weeks of the year,
yeah,
I have seen God's hand and providence in all that I've experienced.
Oh, wow.
I would have robbed myself of the opportunity to see that had I had things my own way. So all glory and praise.
Oh, wow. I think we are done with this interview. I think we can just end it here, because that on its own just speaks volumes. The fact that it's only been a few weeks of the year, but already things are turning out the way you didn't expect. Now, I just am interested, before we even go anywhere, you mean for good, obviously, because you had this plan and things are turning out differently. How does that work? Which God are you praying to? I would like to visit him.
Well, you know, Tabelo, I grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Yeah.
And I count that one of my greatest privileges.
Yeah.
Because from a very young age, we were taught to pray. And I can remember just growing up in life knowing that I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. It's obviously take on a new meaning as I've grown up.
Yes.
But I've never forgotten that. And when I meet challenges, when I face obstacles, and even when I set goals, I approach it in that sense. That the God of Israel, who parted the Red Sea for his children, the God who rose the likes of Moses, the likes of Joseph, people that I personally am inspired by, the three Hebrew boys, Daniel and his friends. So this is the God that I pray to, but he's also my God because I've had personal experiences.
And
I'm so glad for every single testimony, because I find that's actually making evangelism so much easier.
Yes. Oh, wow. That's really beautiful. I'm encouraged already. And I think that from that on its own, there's so much that we can digest. And we are going to get into that in just a moment from now. But how was 2024? Did you take a bit of rest? You seem like a very busy lady doing quite a bit, but I'm sure you took some time in December to rest a little bit.
That is exactly what I did. And I have to say, it's a blessing to work. One of my favorite preachers, Pastor Randy Skeet, has made the point in a number of his sermons. When you're able to get up and put your hands to work, that in itself is a blessing. And I think in my sense, there is even more of a blessing in that I love what I do. You told the audience that I'm a moderator, that I facilitate panels, et cetera, but actually that started off with me being a journalist.
Okay.
And I've had the privilege of having to travel the world.
Definitely.
To report as a journalist.
Yeah.
And that's also opened up other avenues.
So
2024 was a year that took me to countries I'd never been to before, regions of the world I'd never been to. I was in Saudi Arabia for the first time, for example. So they were real highlights. And I saw God, you always use this phrase, increasing my territory. And I really thank him for that. So it was new opportunities, and every every time that I could get on a plane, a train, off to the next assignment. I could see God's providence in all of that. And it's one thing to have opportunities. There is also another thing when you're healthy enough and able to take up those opportunities.
That's very true.
Thank God for providing that too.
That's very true. Really, really love it. Okay. I want to then take you a little bit back, right? And maybe this might sound a bit cliche. You probably get it quite a lot. But can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe where you were born? I'd like to go as far back as that. Where were you born?
Well, thank you for asking. I was born in the beautiful Harare.
Harare, yes.
Exactly. And that is where my roots are. And it's interesting because we left when I was about 6 years old, and I spent the rest of my life growing up in Johannesburg.
Okay.
But there is always this feeling I have when I'm in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
You know, where it's as if, I don't know, my bones know I'm home. So there's always that. But that is where I grew up. And I don't have too many memories of Harare, but the ones I have are vivid.
Yeah.
And they're special memories.
Yeah.
My cousins and I playing together.
Yeah.
Memories of relatives, uncles, aunts, my grandparents' home in the township of Mbare. I have memories of my grandfather, my grandmother. Yeah. These people are late. And as I said, I don't have too many memories of them, but the ones I have are vivid.
Yeah.
So I was born there and then grew up in Johannesburg in South Africa. And this is really, oftentimes when you ask me, you know, if I tell you I'm going home, most times I'm referring to Johannesburg.
Johannesburg.
I was shaped and molded. This is where my earliest church memories are. I was 6 years old when we moved here. And of course, everything from, you know, being in Pathfinders, being in school, primary school, high school, matriculating, starting university, all of that would have happened in Johannesburg.
In Johannesburg.
A place that I hold so dearly to my heart. And of course, life's taken me now to Europe, where I now live.
And whereabouts in Europe do you live?
Very good question, because I'm actually sort of based in two cities. So, officially, it's Berlin, Germany, but because of the job, I'm also spending, maybe even half my time in Brussels. This is the Belgian capital.
Yeah.
And what takes me there is, of course, it is also the capital of the European Union.
Yes.
And so the institutions are there. And because I do a lot of my reporting on the NATO Security Alliance, on the European Union and countries in the European Union, I'm also based out of Brussels.
I want to come back to the NATO bit very, very specifically, because why are you in the cold front of very dangerous things? But anyways, I'm going to come back to that one. Right? So Mbare in Harare, and though faintly very vivid, one or two that you can share about Mbare that you can think of and remember?
Well, I think it has to really be, it's my grandparents and their indulgence. I remember my sekuru, this would be my mother's father. And mother, because by the time I was born, my father's parents were late.
Yeah.
I just remember him spoiling us. And I just remember some conversations that I have with him. In fact, I have a scar on my foot. It was some injury I got.
Yeah.
And I just remember, you know, reporting to him and how he was tenderly looking out for the sore that I was showing Sekuru about. Sekuru would be grandpa in my mother tongue, surely.
Yes.
So I think these are the vivid memories. And I mean, this would have been the house that my mother grew up in as a child. So you know how it is when you go to grandparents, you're being spoiled. So these are the memories that I have. And I also just remember us as kids playing in the yard and in the road. There was a tuck shop nearby. My grandpa would give us coins and we would go and we'll be buying at these tuck shops. So, you know, when I think about these memories and how simple life was, how safe we were as children, the sense of community. This is something that I miss, particularly in Europe. It's something that people don't have there. So I really love that. And the neighbors and my mother knowing her. That is just, these are really special warm memories that I have.
Fantastic. That's really great. And for someone who's never been there like myself and Barry, right? We see, we know, but we see from pictures, but we don't really have that either visiting or lived experience of Mbare, for example. A picture of it, maybe, how would you paint it?
Oh gosh, you know, Mbare is, to me, it's this the bustle of Mbare. Even in my last time there, I just remembered, you know, it's Ekasi, right? So
okay.
the township, for our
okay.
international listeners, these are the townships
yeah.
that we have here in Africa. And I'm
yes.
pretty sure in any country, you know, townships have a similar
there
vibe.
Is. Yeah.
But it's just, it's the sense of community, Sabelo, that I feel like we even don't have in the suburbs, right? Where you are your neighbor's keeper, if
yeah.
you can allow me to, you know,
yeah.
to adapt the phrase in
yeah.
that sense.
It's, yeah.
It's a community. You know, we have fences, so you can see into your neighbor's yards. We don't have, you know, sort of concrete or brick walls.
Yes.
And, you know, there are little community businesses around.
Yes.
So that's really what I could say. And
sure,
I mean, obviously,
sure.
you know, this political situation in Zimbabwe has meant that the economy hasn't been great.
Yeah,
so
true.
You will see that certain things have deteriorated. I mean, even when I hear my mother's stories about the Mbari she grew up in, it's not quite the Mbari that it is today. But still, that sense of community and the
sense
fact
of
that
community.
While things change, some things stay the same.
Yes.
And I think that is the sense with Mbari, that house that my mother grew up in is still standing. It's still housing the grandchildren
yes.
and great-grandchildren. Of my grandparents, so it is that. So Zimbabwe is, for those who've been, I'm sure you'll understand this.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful country.
It is
a safe place, and that's one of the things that I really really appreciate about that place. You know, we have our economic hardship. It is a township after all, but there's just this safety that I feel that we have there.
Indeed. Oh, that's lovely. Now, my next question, I am an emotional person, so I'm going to ask this question, and I hope that you're going to at least try and get my emotional side a little bit vindicated here. So, which side of Johannesburg were you? East, west, west rand? Which side were you?
Well, so we're in the north.
Yeah. You see now, Christine. That's what I was saying. Please think about my emotions before you answer this one.
The truth has to be told.
Let's tell the truth, of course.
Yeah, the truth has to be told. But I hear great things happening. I mean, of course, fellowshipping in the church means we would have visited all of these parts of the city.
Yeah.
We would have fellowshipped in different congregations, and then meeting at places like Stasa,
Kansas, yes,
you know, these events that bring us all together.
Yeah,
so I mean, Joburg is big, but in the Adventist community,
it's a small, very small.
Yeah.
Okay, so where in the northern part, Midrand, Sandton, where?
Okay, so great stories. I think our first home in Johannesburg was actually in Bryanston.
In Bryanston, okay.
And it's a house my father built. So
yeah.
We have that that sense of pride.
Mm.
But nowadays, we're out in sort of Rampark Ridge area.
Okay.
And that is, we've been blessed to call this place home. It's also very close to the high school that I went to and matriculated at.
Yes.
So it's my brother was actually saying the other day, we were driving and saying, oh, you know, I feel like I've been driving in the same streets for years now. I need a change. But for me, it's obviously special being home.
Yeah.
And just, you know, reliving memories. You know, for instance, there's this one street. It had a name change.
Yeah.
It's now Bayes Nordia, but it used to be DF Milan. And one of my most vivid memories with my father, who's also now late, we were driving to school on that road, me in the back seat and listening to the radio and singing our bellies out. So, yeah, so Joburg is really special to me.
Yeah. For those of you who may not know where Bayes Nordia is, it's the one street that no traffic reporter misses. Because the traffic on that road, Bayes Nordia, is just crazy, right? And every traffic reporter will talk about Bayes Nordia. There's that interchange as well. There's just so many things in the north that are just... North is just too much, right? I thought you were going to say the East Rand because that's where I am. And there's a saying that all good things come from the East. So I was hoping you were from the East. I'm so disappointed, Christine. I don't know what we're going to do with my disappointment because I thought you were going to come up from the East Rand of Johannesburg. Like, why the North, right? But anyways, it's fine. That's fine. The North, as some people would say, is privileged. It's the suburbs. It's where everyone wants to be. A lot of our friends, colleagues, family members who come from the southern tip of Johannesburg, maybe some in the East Rand, West Rand as well, want to see themselves in the suburbs and all that. What were some of the challenges that you could think of staying in Bryanston and now Rampark Ridge as well?
Well, I think challenges might be a little bit difficult considering, like you're saying, it is a privileged part of the country to be in. And, you know, in my work, I've seen, you know, some of the living conditions that people are enduring around, you know, especially on our continent here. So when I say challenges, I think I have to just maybe give that a real think. But, you know, it's obviously a privilege to go up in a place like this. But I think, you know, one thing that we miss in places like this is that sense of community that I talked about that you'll find in the townships. I think here people are, you know, have the we have the gated communities, right? So we're busy protecting ourselves from the outside world. And I think we sometimes maybe lose a sense of that. I think I grew up in sort of complexes. This is clusters of homes together. So I have, you know, very good memories growing up as children from different homes playing together. But yeah, I guess what would be different is that maybe we were a little bit away from family. And I think in our sense, because also we were in a different country. That, you know, family was not, you know, easily around. So I think that would what I would say. Just, you know, this existence where, you know, you're away from the root. So to say, and I really miss that. So my brother and I, you know, grew up so far away from cousins, especially those who are still in Zimbabwe. And nowadays we have, you know, digital communications improved so much. Back then, you know, you couldn't do Zoom. There were no WhatsApps. I actually remember when we would call Zimbabwe, sometimes my parents would buy, remember when the public phones were there, and you could either have the cards or the coins. So yeah, I remember actually going to these public telephones, my mother, you know, checking the balance on the card, calling home, and that is how we would get the reports. So I think that would be the thing for me, really. The place itself is okay, but I think just being so far away from relatives was perhaps what I could say was the challenge.
Was the challenge, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, right? And so my next question then would be, do you think that you are privileged, whatever that means to you? And how has that, if it at all, has shaped the person, the lady that you are today, and if that had any impact at all?
Tabelo, I'm massively privileged. And I would not have said this to you in the way I'm going to put it to you perhaps 10 years ago. But now that I am in my 30s, that's as much as I'll say about my age.
That's fine. You never ask a lady her age anyway, so that's fine.
Privilege, Tabelo, is having grown up in the Adventist Church. And I say this because we were sheltered in so many ways. It's growing up in a safe home. We hear of homes where there is abuse. So that is why I say I count myself privileged. It also helps to grow up in a part of the country where amenities are maintained. Where, you know, where you have access to networks. I went to a Model C school. Maybe you can explain that to our international listeners. But this is a good school. It's not a private school, but it's a good school. And, you know, having that education made things easier for me in a sense. But my privilege is growing up in church, having to stand before the church and speak. And the skills that they gave us that I see now lend themselves into the career that I'm in. I remember speaking somewhere and somebody came to me and said, oh, you know, I want my daughter to speak like you. And where did you learn? And I said, so I have to be honest with you, this started for me in church. That was my first encounter with public speaking. So these things that we take for granted at the time, you know, getting ready and being sent to Pathfinders might not be what I wanted to do on a particular day. But I now see how these things were so helpful, even in the job that I do today. So yes, I do count myself privileged, and that is the reason why.
Nothing wrong with that. And I think that's the... we are tired of hearing how our people, and when I say our people, I mean the black community of, we are struggling, we must speak about such things, that although there's that bit, there's also this bit as well, because I think we've got a biased view of Africa. And all that international people think of when they think of Africa is poverty. There are no cars. There are no streets. No, we have Bryanston. Come on. We've got some really great places across the African continent. So nothing wrong with being privileged. And I think we need to start panting that a little bit more as well. Now, let's talk about your school here in Johannesburg. Which primary school did you go to and which high school did you go to? And what was that experience like?
Amazing. So I went to Sharon Lee Primary School.
Okay.
And, you know, I remember, in fact, I can tell you the names of all of my teachers from grade 1 to 7.
Oh,
that
nice.
That is how much of an impression I had.
Nice.
Yes. And then, but I had my first sort of great disappointment there. Because before I left, I wanted to be selected as a prefect, and that didn't happen. And I was massively disappointed. But by the time I was in high school, you know, God answered my prayer tenfold, if I could say, because I had the privilege of being the president of the Representative Council of Learners, what we call RCL.
Look at that.
By the time I was in matric, so that was a real sort
yes.
of, you know, God you know, doing something amazing down the line. But yes, I went to Rampoka and I say, these are, you know, Model C schools. We had great teachers.
Yeah.
I still remember, you know, how I was taught to spell, how I was taught to speak. I remember extra murals with, and this is all, by the way, free of charge. I did debating. I dabbled with, you know, public speaking at school. I was more on the less on the sporty side, right?
Okay.
I'm not super physical and active, although I do like to stay fit, but I was not an athletic kid. But, you know, I wanted to do drama and things like this, and that's what I did at the schools that I was able to go to. So these schools really set me up, Tapelo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once you are able to communicate in a certain way, once you've picked up certain, even social skills, this really does make a difference. So
it really does.
Absolutely fantastic schools. They still maintain the standards. In fact, I go back to high school every now and again, speak to, you know, learners there and just, you know, try and encourage people, young people especially. The kind of thing that I wish somebody would have told me when I was younger. So yes, schools were great. And to the point, you know, about, you know, the perception people have about our continent. And I'm not talking about a private school, by the way. I'm talking about a public school or a government school, as we call it here, but still able to give us a very high standard of education.
It's interesting that you mentioned that you still make some time out of your busy schedule to still come back and give talks to them and talk to them and maybe encourage them and all that. That's such an amazing thing, if one comes to think about it, because often at times, whether you come from a privileged place or you come from not so privileged, once we think in our mind, and I'm going to use that quote unquote, when we think that we've made it, we never go back.
Well, you know, for me, it was just I felt the strong affinity, because I think what it is for me is I'm abroad now and I see, you know, the education system in countries like Germany, for instance. You know, with us, once you speak English with a very good accent, you've made it in this
life.
But I go abroad, Tabelo, and that's not a flex, because the average person speaks 2-3 international languages.
Sure.
So, you know, then I felt, you know, I need to go home and say to the ones coming up, you know, prepare yourself to be an international citizen. Borders are one thing, but we live in a world now where nothing really separates us. The technology has brought us so close to each other. And if you can position yourself to be an international or internationally minded person, an internationally equipped person. So the message I take to kids in school is to say, look, you know, instead of spending all this time on social media, you know, looking at other people's feeds, you know, why not dedicate some of that time to pick up an international language? You never know where life is taking you. So try and prepare yourself for that. Open your eyes to what the wider world has to offer, because it is within your reach. So that's one of my motivations, just trying to get back home and say to the others, I've been to the other side, I've seen it. This is how you can gear yourself up to go there.
This is how you can gear yourself. Oh, that's lovely. Really, really love it. And now let's talk about then your, I don't want to call it an epiphany moment, but the moment where in your high school years you realize that journalism, communication, these are the things that you really like and maybe want to venture into it. Was it something that was an epiphany or how did you pick up that, actually, this is what I want to get into?
You know, Tapelo, my story is interesting because if I'm being honest, God really did the work here in terms of just pushing me to where I needed to be.
Yeah.
And if you look at how things aligned, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was clear, if you go and read my reports, what teachers were saying, were my strongest subjects, for example. So it was clear that I had this gift of communication.
Yeah.
You know, people would look forward to my speeches in English class, for example. So that was always there.
Yeah.
So I had a bit of, I think the first, I would say maybe 2 years of high school were a little bit difficult for me. So I wasn't fully focused.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a tough adolescence, and also the death of my dad in that time also sort of derailed me. So I have to say, for about 2 years, I wasn't really thinking about, you know, the future, so to say. I was just going along with the motion, you know, you need to be in school, you need to pass, you need to do this and whatever. But I think the closer you get to matric, and that is obviously when you're starting to leave school, when you're now getting grade 10 and you've got to choose, you know, what subjects, and this really will weigh on your opportunities going forward, what courses you can do in university.
Yeah.
I started giving it a think, and to be honest, it wasn't fully clear to me. It now makes sense if I go back. I, you know, grew up in a house where I was exposed. I mean, if you would hear my parents discussing politics and watching the news bulletins and then the debates that will follow on afterwards. So, you know, I was exposed to the news. My father, back then it was the 8 p.m., the flagship news bulletin. And I remember being interested when some stories would come on, especially human interest stories about people, you know, not so much the politics, but really a face, a name. These things would stick with me. So I didn't know it at the time, but I was, you know, this was already the indication that this was the career that I could get into. So it all goes back to I matriculate, I've enrolled in subjects for university. Journalism isn't even one of them. But I matriculated in 2009.
Yeah.
And if you remember, South Africa had the World Cup in 2010.
In 10 years.
Yeah. So we were going to have, in my first year of university, we were going to have this sort of very long, what do you call it, holiday period because of the World Cup. And I thought, well, I need to be busy in that time.
Okay.
So I wrote a letter to ETV and I said, look, I just want to be busy during the holiday time. If it means I'm on set when they're recording shows, giving water to the stars, whatever, right?
Sure.
I didn't even, so this was what I was going for. And I got a response back, and this was from the news department. And they were saying, hi, yes, we do have this program where we take a student to come in for a week and get a sense of the newsroom.
Yeah.
So it's not what I was initially asking for, but it was what I was offered, and I took it.
Yo.
And I remember this would have been, right, if I'm not mistaken, about July. It was the winter here, and the World Cup was happening. So I went in the first week. You know, people in South Africa who maybe follow the news religiously will know some of these people, the Kathy Moshatanas of the world, all of these, you know, primetime journalists we have here.
Yeah.
These are the ones that I met in that week, going out with them to stories, you know, being in court, and then the next day being at a protest, and the next day being at a political rally, very interesting places. And I fell in love with the job. So I done one the first semester, basically. And by the time I went back to the second, I changed my subjects. And I took on journalism there.
Okay.
So it was sort of love at first exposure. And that week that I was granted became the entire holiday.
Sure.
I spent the 6 weeks in the newsroom going in. I was not an intern because I wasn't even officially an intern, but they'd allowed me to come back. And I will never forget those days. And I say God engineered that because, and very early on, I mean, it was literally after having done one semester.
Yes.
So it didn't take me back too
long.
And I'm really grateful for my mother, who was super supportive in the whole process, you know, going in and coming out and saying I'm changing my major, who helped me. I mean, taking me to ETV in Hyde Park every single day or giving me taxi money, taxi fare. And when we say taxi in South Africa, we don't mean the metered taxi, the minivans.
I realize
if you say taxi to people outside, they have another impression. So, yeah, so my, you know, very supportive family who prayed. And, you know, God took that time that I was learning all of these things. I built a long relationship with people in that news organization that I still have to this day. But all of this was helping me, and it also fast-tracked my career. I was able to hit the international scene so soon afterwards because I basically spent my entire degree year gaining very practical experience. By the time I graduated, I had the real hands-on experience that I had been afforded the opportunity to get via the newsroom at ENCA.
Oh, that's lovely. With the university then itself, what was the experience like, you know, at the time when you were joining there? And did you enjoy the classes thereafter? It seems like you changed in second semester, and that's a big thing on its own.
massive. And you know what it was? Mm. And I think people who are in journalism class with me will attest.
Mm.
So because I was now getting this real sort of exposure to what the industry is,
yes.
You know, it's our profession is one of those things where the textbook is one thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The textbook will teach you, you know, the basics, but,
yeah.
You know, the real world exposure and doing the job practically, I mean, it's a whole different world, right?
Mm.
No textbook can prepare you for having to conduct that interview in that same situation, right? So, of course, there will be do's and don'ts, how to structure your stories, the elements that need to be in there, but it doesn't quite prepare you for sitting in a courtroom and struggling to hear what the judge is saying because your ears aren't accustomed to the acoustics. It doesn't quite tell you how you pick up the phone and get somebody to talk to you. It doesn't also prepare you, you know, for confronting people in difficult situations and persuading them to tell you their story. So, you know, I was a bit of a know-it-all. I think I was a bit unteachable. I felt like I was now in a position to teach the class because, of course, this hands-on experience that I was getting. So I think I was a bit of a nightmare for my lecturer.
Yeah.
but you know, my peers understood where I was coming from. So I remember getting very aggressively involved in the curriculum of the course.
Sure.
I remember writing to the vice chancellor at the university, you know, complaining about the standard of the teaching because I just felt that it was not close enough to the real experience that I was having. So I think at some point maybe that was not, you know, the best advice, but I was so passionate about this this job and this industry that I got involved in that level. But yes, I have great memories from there. We had a very sort of the assignments were very practical, and of course I aced them because of the exposure and even the contact book, you know, being able to contact people because I had access to the contact book at ENCA in that newsroom. So I did quite well in my course in that regard.
I suppose that exposure, that practical exposure then, as you try and bring it to the classroom and try and match the two worlds, like, no, something just isn't gelling very well with these things. And I suppose that's why then you're a little bit of a problem to the lecturers. But I think a good problem, because maybe as a lecturer you need that one student that will be like, no, that's not what it is. Because if you get everyone agreeing to it, sometimes maybe the lecturing thing can get boring. Okay, I'm not a lecturer. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think you might be. I think you're being very generous, Kapil. I think I annoyed most of those lecturers.
would you consider yourself a smart person, an intelligent person?
You know what I am, Tabitha, and I get this from my mother.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, I didn't know it, but I have this, what they call emotional intelligence.
Okay.
And I am able to, you know, I am very aware of myself.
Yeah.
In any situation.
Okay.
If you and I have a confrontation,
okay.
I can, you know, sort of work it back and see
okay.
how my own circumstance might have poured into that. I have a very good sense of reflection. And so I wouldn't say I'm the most intelligent person. I'm no Einstein. I've never measured my IQ.
Yeah.
But I don't imagine I'm close to Einstein. But what I'm good at, I'm good at. And I think I'm very empathetic. I have an analytical mind.
Mm.
And one of the things that this job's also done, and oh, and by the way, arguments with my mother growing up. Debates as well.
Yeah, yeah.
This sharpened my sense of, you know, developing a healthy sense of skepticism, not just accepting things for what they are, but questioning things. I've always had this sort of curious nature. My mother tells me growing up, I constantly asked why. And I know a lot of kids do it, but I still haven't grown out of the habit. So I still ask why. I still probe. And that curiosity has opened the world to me. So while you think you know things, I think sometimes we see things happening around us and we assume that's the reason. But I'll actually ask, what is the reason?
What is the
reason? And then I'll know information that you won't know. So by the time you and I are just having chats, I can tell you things that you didn't know, but not because I'm smarter than you are.
Yeah.
It's just because I feed my curiosity. I'm very sort of, I'm that level of intellect. You know, somebody who just wants to know what's going on.
Yes.
I love reading. News. I'm in tune with current affairs. I listen to political speeches. I mean, this is my hobby, right? So work is actually a bit of a hobby for me as well.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that's where I'll put myself. I would say, yeah, very smart. And yeah, I think, you know, just learning, you know, how to read people, how to hear what people aren't saying. I mean, this is also what we learned. For example, when I started, one of my first jobs was for CNBC Africa.
Yeah.
We report on financial markets.
Yeah.
And you know, for instance, being sent out, a company is reporting its quarterly earnings, for example, and they put out a press statement. There are the numbers that they want you to see, but then, you know, you have to look for the numbers that they don't want you to see. So you can't report on what they're telling you. You have to report on what they don't want to tell you. And, you know, learning the skill set to find what that is. So, yeah, I would consider myself gifted in that sense. So just having this ability to communicate with people.
Firstly, I think that you're just being modest, which is fine. Right. But I think there's a little bit more than just being, I'm okay, I think I understand. No, I think you're really smart, and that's a beautiful thing as well. And that's a blessing. I mean, that's really a blessing. And we can, of course, attest that to God as well, and God's grace and clearly Him being a part of your life as well. So really, really appreciate that. So let's talk then about you graduate, you finish your course, right? And then now you start at CNBC. That experience, what was that like?
Oh, that was amazing. So I landed up at CNBC Africa. It's a long story that I won't get the details detained us, but like, you know, we're reporting on, you know, it's the Consumer News and Business Channel, right? So we're reporting on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And, you know, so it was being sent out to report on companies. So, you know, first order of business was familiarizing myself with companies listed on the stock exchange, understanding how you report on companies, what numbers matter to investors, because that's your audience. And then also, you know, speaking to the relevant politicians. So politicians who have portfolios that are of interest to the business community, to the investor community. So I think that, you know, I had a great editor, and God blessed me with a woman called Monique Vanek, a mentor to me who I would spend hours on end with. And she was giving me the input of how I approach things. So while I had the ability to communicate, I didn't know all there was to know, certainly not even close. But, you know, just the love that I had for this and the exposure that I had, you know, reading financial markets, understanding the jargon and all of this. So it was a steep learning curve, but I wouldn't have had it any other way. And I have to say, it was, you know, it was the fact that I had been doing all of this sort of like unofficial internship work at ENCA meant I had a lot of stuff in the bag already, so I could go out and I could be commissioned for assignments that perhaps somebody just starting out would not ordinarily been able to do. But because of the exposure and the experience that I'd had at ENCA, I was able to produce a news package. I was able to be sent out and conduct an interview. I spent time, you know, producing programs, you know, thinking up segments and who the best people could be, you know, what could be of interest to our audience, topics, and then inviting the right people to come on and speak. And I built relationships with people that I still stay in touch with today, who I can give a call and they can help me understand the goings on in the economy or certain things happening. And I have to say, I mean, things took off really quick. I think there's an expression now that I'm forgetting, but it was really a quantum leap. And I remember in my first year already getting an award. I was recognized at the Vodacom Journalism Awards as the best newcomer in the Gauteng region. So, you know, this is literally in my first job. So, you know, you could see how God had, you know, been sort of paving the way for me,
you
know, putting me in places where I could build networks, relationships, where I can accumulate experience, where I could gain, you know, access to mentors, people who saw the spark in me and who really wanted to help. So this was amazing. Steep learning curve, but, you know, I wouldn't have had it any other way. I think I've already said this. And then, of course, that prepared me for an international career, because when you're reporting on the stock market, sometimes it's factors outside of the domestic environment that weigh on the market. So at that time, I remember Europe was having its debt crisis. We were just coming out of, you know, but we were still feeling the effects of the 2007-2008 global financial crisis. So all of these things, you know, were opening up the world to me. You know, what German Chancellor in Angela Merkel did in Berlin, and how it weighed on the market here, on the currency here, all of these things. You know, the Russia, I remember there were stories about the Russia and currency being depreciated. We also had the historic fall in oil prices in that time. So these were huge global international stories that I had exposure to because I was working in a newsroom that reports to an audience that is affected by these sort of geopolitical current affairs events and new stories.
Now, let's then quickly fast forward to you now being in Europe, reporting on NATO. I told you I was going to come back to that. You're reporting on NATO, Saudi Arabia, and all those sort of stuff. How did that come about?
Okay, so I had, at some point I start looking outwards. You know, one thing I have to tell you, you were asking about primary school. Mm. When I was a kid, you know, when they would send us to the library and say to us, read for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Lesson, this was with the lesson. I always remembered that I would go to like the encyclopedias and I would flip and browse and peruse, you know, different countries. I remember, you know, there was, you know, of all the different, I remember there was books on Greece and I would open and I would see Athens and the Acropolis and, you know, Spain and all of these countries, the Middle East. And I remember just thinking, I always wanted to travel as a kid.
Okay.
So here I am at CNBC Africa. And of course, you know, being the ambitious person that I am, I'm watching international news trips, right? So the dream is I want to land up at a CNN or a BBC, you know, a Bloomberg or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
What I appreciated very early on is that, you know, I realized that, you know, in the world's wide and you need another language. And I think my frustration here is we didn't report necessarily on Francophone countries. I mean, I was mostly reporting on South Africa and regional markets and SADC in the Southern Africa region. But I realized that there's a whole other part of this continent that they speak another language called French, right? So my plan was to get into a newsroom in France, pick up the language, and then I would be, you know, bilingual in the sense of international languages. And that would, you know, I could really take Africa because I could speak English and I could speak French. So I had my eyes on France, but it was, you know, God opened up opportunities in Germany. So I found myself joining Germany's international news news broadcaster called Deutsche Welle.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, this was, I think, my first contact with somebody at Deutsche Welle, right, would have been in about April.
Okay.
And I was in the same year. So, and then I was months later in September, I was packing bags and moving to Germany. So I arrived in October. I remember the 1st of October 2015. So it was just this, you know, the fact, and, you know, I say journalism really opened my eyes to the whole world that was out there. And I remember thinking, okay, Berlin, it had never been on my radar. But I remembered, just saying, let's go out there, let's do it. I didn't know a soul in Germany. I couldn't speak a word of German. Afrikaans, I learned, actually doesn't help with the German all that much. But yeah, that's how I landed up at this international news channel. What they were doing is they had sort of expanded. They'd launched a 24-hour news operation. And they, of course, were looking for journalists from around the world to come into the newsroom and make it an international newsroom. So it was a great time to be joining. It was an interesting time because that was also when Germany, you know, the events that happened at that time are now weighing heavily politically in the country. There was this big migration flow from the Middle East to Europe. This was also sparked. This was sparked by the war in Syria. So a lot of people went into Germany. Now, of course, there's, you know, backlash, you know, the numbers of people that came in and the impact that that had on the social, you know, system, social welfare system, etc. You know, it was this Chancellor Angela Merkel there at that time, a strong woman leader, somebody whose leadership skills I absolutely admire in a politician. But yeah, so this was the time and place for me. So I arrived there, I have to say, very naive, not knowing the enormity of what I had done. You know, uprooting myself from everything that was familiar, throwing myself into something. But, you know, God always gave me this fiery courage. It's also something that my father, you know, developed in me as well and encouraged me to foster. And there I was doing the thing, you know, and there as well, you know, I started reporting on countries I'd never been on in terms of, you know, we would do news bulletins and we're talking about Syria and Ukraine and all of these places that I had never visited. And little did I know that in due time, God would open opportunities for me to start traveling and reporting on countries in Europe. And that's been, you know, a great privilege. And then at some point, you know, the moderating, now you're, you know, because of your journalistic ability and skills, you're now able to sort of moderate, you know, conversations between policymakers from around the world. And I have a bit of an international appeal, you know, coming from one region of the world and living in another, bridging sort of two worlds. That's opened a lot of opportunities for me as well.
I'm sure it has. And what is the one story that you can remember that where you thought, what am I doing? Right at the cold face of it, at least that's what we hear about journalists most of the time, especially with this NATO's and sort of, and all these other things. I'm sure there is a story where you are like, oh my goodness, what am I doing here? My safety or something is at risk here. But you're like, I'm a journalist. I'm going to continue with this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually interesting because, I mean, one of the stories that sticks out to me most, and, you know, you always, like, I remember a lot of the reporting that I've done here. This was, oh, man, it was a horrific story where, you know, there was this period where we were having this issue of what they call corrective rape in the townships, right?
Yeah.
So, lesbian women were being raped, gang raped by men, and brutally so. And the justification was we're correcting them. So
yes.
It had been one incident where a woman had been killed, and I just remembered we went to the family home. And if you're familiar with the African culture, it was the setting where, you know, family relatives are sat in the house, in the room. They're wearing, of course, the headgear. You know, people are in mourning. And I remember us, you know, doors opening for us to go right into the heart of this family home to this woman's mother who sat on a mattress surrounded by relatives while they cried. And we were there to get, obviously, you know, their response. We needed to talk. So we needed them to talk to us and tell us what happened. And I remember sitting there thinking, you know, look at the access, you know, look at, you know, I mean, this is a vulnerable space and you're walking into somebody's home, not just the living room, right? You're going right into, you know, intimate parts of somebody's home. You're being, you know, you're seeing raw emotion.
Sure.
What this did for me is I never took for granted the privilege and access that I have as a journalist, right? The fact that people in the position like that felt that they had to talk to me, they had to say their story to me because it makes a difference. So I've always understood that this job makes a difference. Because, you know, people have that, and it should. It's something I never took lightly. So I know you were asking about how dangerous the job can be. And it was interestingly enough, it's actually so, but I wanted to start by telling you that really shaped, you know, and this was one of my earlier assignments, actually, when I was still sort of interning at ENCA. But by the time I left, you know, I really had the sense of you've got to be responsible with this journalistic access that you have to people. So the most dangerous for me would have been I went back home to do some reporting in Zimbabwe. This was in Mugabe's time. Mugabe was still there. And Zimbabwe had basically become a police state. Thapelo, local journalists could not report independently and fairly about, you know, what was going on in the country. Countries about, you know, I'm sorry, reporting about how, especially the political violence. You know, so we needed to go in there and tell the story about how ZANU-PF under Mugabe was really cracking down on people's freedoms, right? People weren't allowed to express themselves. They were hunting people online for statements people were making on Facebook. People were being disappeared, activists.
Sure.
People who were just simply calling out for the country to be better. Now, I could obviously, I didn't go in under the guise of being a journalist, but being a Zimbabwean, I was able to get into the country. And we were doing, I was working with locals and, you know, people were scared. You know, if we get caught doing this, we could get locked up. We could be in trouble. I mean, the regime was really, really, really out, especially journalists. So it was just one of, I remember, like, when I would get home to the hotel in the evenings, because remember, the government's got spies everywhere. So I'd be worried, like, you know, are the people at the hotel getting suspicious about who I am and what I'm doing? Are they, you know, looking into me? Have they maybe alerted the authorities? I remember some nights I would get a fried hearing talking in the corridor and think, oh, are the, you know, the police, are they coming to get me, you know? So that was super, super dangerous. And I thank God for protecting me. I was able to do the reporting, take the memory cards with the footage, and I did the editing in Berlin, and the reporting went out, and you know, nobody got into trouble or anything. But yeah, that was really one time where I thought, you know, if I had been caught, you get thrown in prison, Thapelo, right? And that's it, right? It's really hard for things, you know, from that time.
Yeah.
And when it comes to war zones, I came really close to going to Ukraine when the war broke out with Russia. But I decided against it eventually, even though I'm trained to go. I've done some military training for reporting in these hostile environments. But I think the most dangerous was, you know, that assignment. But the assignment that had the most impact for me was, like I said, that story in the township where this woman had been brutally murdered.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, let's draw to a close now, because I'm sitting here and I'm just admiring. I'm like, oh, that's beautiful career that this has really turned out to be. And we thank God for that. I want us to then talk about money
Yes.
Particularly euros now. Now that you earn in euros, it's a nice, nice life problem that you have. Right? But how do you characterize your relationship with money? And what would be the one lesson that you think you've learned?
Oh, wow. So like I say again, and I'll bring you back to our growing up in the Seventh-day Adventist yes. Church, and I have to credit an elder Abim Pato.
Yeah.
I'll never forget one Sabbath school lesson study. We yeah. were talking, I think that the theme of stewardship had come into the lesson study at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he took us through a series, making us understand God's expectations for how we ought to manage resources. And I think I started out knowing that obviously 10% belongs to God, and that's one thing. But you know, nothing could have prepared me for, you know, managing yourself in that way. I mean, I went, like, it was literally overnight. I went from earning rands and euros, and of course when you do the exchanges, this is a lot of money. What I would say is I made a lot of mistakes, and I would say to people, you know, we have the literature in our church, you know, we have templates of how we should be budgeting.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest lesson I've learned is, you know, spending. Watch that carefully. Don't just buy things because you can afford it,
yes.
right? Really be thinking about the future. Learn yes. about investments. Start businesses.
Sure.
Gain assets.
Sure.
And budgeting is really, really key. And
yeah.
For somebody who lives abroad, I would say familiarize yourself with the tax regimes, the countries that you live in, how these things work, and your obligations, because, you know, the moderation and stuff that I do is also like, that's a small business that I have on the side. And suddenly you're now having to deal with tax authorities because, you know, you're running a small business. So
yes.
I would say we need to educate ourselves more. And, you know, there are now tools online that can help us. But also, I think our church also has a lot of
yeah.
supporting literature in that
That's
regard.
True.
And stewardship is a wholesome principle
That's
to follow.
True.
And if you can live by it,
yeah.
you'll really be blessed and make the most of the resources God has given you.
Okay. 3 minutes with you now. What advice would you give your younger self? If you were to go back to your younger self with the experience of continents now and countries, is there anything you would say to your younger self?
Yeah, I mean, the world is so big, right? And so is your God. And I think that I needed to just be a little bit more. I think I wallowed, you know, like I said, I wasted a lot of time, Tabelo, in that, you know, first sort of 3 years of high school, just wallowing in my misery and not being
yeah.
super focused, right?
Yeah.
If I had already from then been strategic, I could have saved myself a whole lot of trouble. I wish I would have gone back and maybe taken history as a subject, because
okay.
that helps you make sense of the world today.
Okay.
A lot of the challenges we're having in the world today,
yeah.
you know, history has the explanation of why
yeah.
things are like that, relations
yeah.
between countries that have
yeah.
such big implications.
Okay.
So I would go back maybe and do different subjects. I also perhaps wouldn't necessarily go and have studied journalism, right? I would have studied something else, perhaps international relations
okay.
or even economics. I could still have done journalism, but journalism is something that I was taught practically on the job. I didn't need a 3-year degree to do
yes.
journalism. So I think for young people out there, start thinking about, you know, already what the future holds for you. It isn't just about the next term and getting past that and going to the next one, but really think about the future and how you can equip yourself
yeah.
for it already. I think
yeah.
if I had been a bit more proactive, I could have, you know, taken amazing shortcuts.
If there's one thing that you've just did right now in this little 1 minute, is that you've warmed my heart, because I'm an economist. I studied economics and finance. So when you say, I could have done it, I'm like, yes, girl, yes. You know, you and I should have this conversation, because that's what I majored in, economics and finance. I'm like, yeah, this is where
I'm
the world
not from
should
the East
going.
Rand, but I'm a huge fan of economists. So I've redeemed myself
yes.
In our conversation today.
Yeah, no, I really, really love economics. That's literally my first love, and I'm privileged to also have gone to study that as well. So really, yeah, you've just warmed my heart there. So that's really, really amazing. As we end then, where is Christian going? You've achieved quite a bit. You're traveling, you're doing what you love. And where do you see yourself then in the next 10 years?
Great question. And I've been giving it a lot of thought, and I'm actually working towards it. So, you
okay.
know, I love journalism, and I love all the, you know, things that it's shown me. But as a reporter, as a journalist, I can only report on. I can't necessarily influence things. I'm not a change agent, so to say. In some ways, we are, because we expose things and things should be done about it. But I really want to get out there and lead from the front, not necessarily as a political leader, but I want to build something. I'm very, very, very keen on developing our continent further. I have seen how the world is unfairly tilted against us. You're an economist, you'll understand. The borrowing rates that, you know, the interest rates that we pay for borrowing on the continent. I see how, you know, the international financial architecture is sort of working against us here in Africa. And this is for history, historical reasons that go back to the colonial era. So I really want to be at the forefront of re-engineering the international system of governance, the international financial architecture, so that we can improve things for the continent, so that we can create more opportunities for our people, and also to just fix our politics, fix our governance, fix our institutions, make them stronger. This is really what I want to do. And of course, you know, as a child of God, it's always thinking about, how do you get the word out there? You know, I like my sort of personal ministries, the opportunities that I have to speak to people closest to me, but I want, you know, to be involved in a global ministry that tells people of the second coming of our Savior, Christ Jesus.
Yeah. Ooh, that's lovely. I think the architecture of the financial world, which is, like you said, skewed against us as the African continent, is the reason why I'm also doing my MPhil in development finance this year and next year as well. So again, I think you should be my... I should interview you on some of these things when I do my paper for my course.
Well, Thapelo, as a good journalist does, I'm going to be getting your contact from your producers.
Definitely.
And you'll be getting calls from me to give me expert opinion when I'm pursuing my story.
No, why are you turning this thing now? No, Christine, why are you turning this thing now? Because it's the other way. I should be interviewing you. So please. But as we end, then I'd really like to hear this one. There's a young person, particularly, I want to be particularly specific to say there's a young black woman right now who will listen to this interview and who maybe follow you. And they're seeing the great things that you're doing. And we thank God for that. And again, also kudos to you for the hard work that you're putting in doing this thing. It's not easy. But they are looking up to you, about to give up. Things are not doing very well. I mean, if you think about the matriculants that got their, you know, results, and some have failed, didn't make it, they wanted to be journalists as well. What would be your message to them of encouragement?
You know, I want to say to somebody that you are who God says you
are.
If you look to society, if you look to, you know, anywhere else, I think I don't want to get engaged in self-pity here, but just today I was having conversations with people how, you know, black women around the world are really at the bottom of the pool. So that is what the world is telling us, right? That this is where you're ranked. But listen to what God is saying to you. You know, you are who God says you are. Dream big and work hard. And God will open doors for you.
Thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for sharing with us a bit about yourself. And kudos to you for the great work that you are doing. And may God continue to bless you, open up opportunities for you, and really, really expand your territory as well. And we are really inspired by the work that you do, your dedication to your work. And again, I pray a blessing on your life going forward.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pilo. It's been great being with you this evening. I appreciate this.
Thank you so much. God bless you, and have a good evening.
Amen.
Thank you so much. That was, of course, Sis Christine talking to us this evening about herself, her work, her job, and what she has done. Your beautiful story.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.